Joey would freak out.
Yeah.
Not enough bathrooms in there.
Yes. See, individuality is the only way this creative intelligence can test itself. There is no way it can test itself in a unified field. Unified field is unified field.
Is that why movies and stories where we have the terribly oppressed individual who wins are so exhilarating? Even though the movie Rocky was a real, everybody
had a role to play, right?
When Rocky won,
yeah.
Italian stallion.
Hmm?
Italian stallion won.
I don't want boxing. It's a Rocky 4 and 5 now.
They're still all watching it. He's winning. Even over the Russians. He made a steal. Great music. All right, picture for one moment. Your fingers were never separated on your hand. They had the total outline, but they weren't separated. How would you function? Like a duck. But even a duck, they're separated to some extent. That's right.
Well, you can close it to a certain degree.
But the individuality of the fingers creates the uniqueness of the hand. And no finger, no matter how you look at them, are equal. Each one is unique to itself, and each one is important for the function of the hand.
I got very unique fingers. Can anybody put their two fingers together like that, and then put this through without breaking those two fingers?
Well, that's very good technique. If
yeah,
see, very good technique.
Put it through without breaking the two. My mother could do that, and that drove me
good.
Batty as a child, I practiced and practiced. Like
well, that is good. That's tremendous control of the brain over the mechanism.
I can't do it on my left hand.
Exactly. But that's tremendous control. Very tremendous control.
I'm first going to show these fingers what I want them to do.
I don't know if you find yourself not functioning well, if you're feeling
a little basic,
scatterbrained, or, you know, where you just, if you have a task to accomplish and you want to be practical about it, but you find yourself not approaching it, is it better to do equiflow or to meditate? I mean, just for the moment, I mean, you know, besides the times to do meditation. That if you just you find yourself in a situation where you're just not approaching
quick alignment, something that you can quickly realign.
Meditation is a jumper cable to work you to the experience of equiflow. Equiflow is the end product. We weren't giving you the end product until we realize that people ain't going to know what they're working for, and they can sit down and do meditation, and then as years go by, then they get bored. What is the end product of the thing? Is to bring back the flow of the mechanism in an equal distribution to control the breakdown rate. So by, we said it was what Luther Burbank did in the walnut. He didn't reduce the size of the tree. All he do was reduce the eating time of the nut. He couldn't reduce the growing time to make it bigger, to, for it to be used to make a furniture or a beam of a house. We can't reduce the cleaning up time of the mechanism or the confrontation time of the mechanism, but we could speed up the end experience of the balancing of your body in order to for you to have something as a reference when situations come up that you don't panic. And even though meditation is there and all other methods are there, what is the end result of all these methods aiming at? Are they aiming at a distortion of your health? Are they aiming a balance between too fast or too slow? If they're aiming at a balance between too fast and too slow, what would be the feeling? What would be the thing that you'd have? It would be an equiflow feeling where health would operate, where you can measure the endorphin reaction of the brain over the immune level operating for the first time in a rational way. And that's exactly what you're trying to give to the individual. It's a form of a Luther Burbank compression time range in terms of gaining the immunity control of your mechanism to allow you to function. But the techniques towards it, meditation and all the other various things like Tai Chi and all these things, they are all the jumper cables towards the one effect. So to sum it up, the truth is one, and what that one truth is, it's the unequal flow of the rhythms of the mechanism of the body. The paths are many. Those are the jumper cable ways, all the different techniques. There are no condemnation from none of them. Cleaning up, no matter what path you choose, you still got to clean up your body. So this is the essence of what we're doing. We're trying to get you to recognize that you can rise above the fear and the limitation of a confrontation that comes to you. Instead of panic and worrying, you can immediately gain the control by an equiflow and then go back and work and clean up the body. That doesn't say it takes away from meditation. It doesn't take away from other meds. They are there in with you to use, but the quick correct a situation that may put you in a panic state, equiflow would resolve it right there. That's the essence of it.
I would almost say that the same way. She left, didn't she? A lot of that is residue that you carry around of your toxicity, isn't it?
Yes.
From the 30 years of mucking it up.
That's right.
So it's just, you're going to have throughout, just like she was having problems with her health, well, having problems with concentration or energy level or any of that.
That's right.
Kinds of
yeah. In other words, we're trying to give you a taste of the wedding cake before you get married. That's another way of saying it.
That's a good way to say it.
See, a taste of what it would be before you actually pull it all together. And pulling it all together is based on the principle of cleaning up the body. Cleanliness is godliness, is the equiflow, is the end result of it. But it comes through so many different avenues and techniques. They're all there for the balancing. But if you know what you're going to experience, then you can work quicker to get that experience established. So a little taste of it is sufficient to stimulate the person to want to clean up, and then to feel that they can't clean up because they're maybe incompetent or feeling left out. No. It's just a way to give them something to recognize what they're working for, then they can start working on their body cleanup.
I had another question about the equiflow. Today, I was real scatterbrained, and I had a task that I had set for myself to do, and it required sitting down at the typewriter and doing it,
yeah.
And sitting down with a book, and I wasn't concentrating very well. And so I lay down and did the equiflow, and I more or less felt the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I got up, I thought, now, should I take the time to go and walk 35 minutes, or is it activity? If the idea of the Equiflow is to get you functioning in that, and the practical activity that I wanted to do or felt like I needed to do was sitting down at the typewriter with my textbook and making out my class plan. So that's what I did. And the energy didn't last for a real long time. So then I assumed, oh, well, I probably should have gone ahead and what seemed like would have been taking up. I have a big problem with time all the time. I never have enough of it. I'm always in some kind of conflict with time. But then I came to the conclusion that, well, it's not just activity then, it's you have to take that time to go. Right now I have to take the time to finish out the process of the Equiflow, which is to walk for the 35 minutes before I would have sat down to my task. I was somehow associating it just with activity in general.
Well, let me explain. You've already established what it feels like. The mobile state is to allow you to operate with that feeling of it consciously. So sitting down, walking, working, is to be aware that you're locking into it to perform work. So if you had related to it in terms of allowing it to keep you working without having to get up and walk, it will stay with you. But because you had doubts as to where it will stay with you, it shut off. So once you recognize it's there and it's operating for you in the mobile state, means that in a walking movement, you don't disengage your identification with it. No matter what it is, you try to identify and perform the service or whatever, but that is there to let you perform the service efficiently, because why would you want it in the first place if you were synchronized? If you weren't synchronized, that's why you would want it, to go to do it, because you're feeling what? Being pulled too fast or too slow. But if you're synchronized, you only have two positions, the mobile and the immobile position. The mobile position is to allow you to work every moment in that state.
So that was my own fixation on being hung up on doing it just right.
Right. Once you're feeling it and you have work to do, you don't disengage from the feeling. You go ahead and do your work with the awareness that this principle is directing the movements for you to perform it without feeling stressed out.
But you don't need the 1 minute for each deal. That's just to get you off the ground.
Right,
to start,
right.
And then you forget that and you just go do it.
Go do it, right.
Yeah.
You are
so easy to get fixated.
You've already done the action of locking into it already, and you know what it feels like. From then on, whatever you're doing, driving a car, working, you feel that relationship, because that is the conscious control of your mechanism. When you disengage, you're putting it into a subliminal trust, to where it will do it at a subliminal level, and when you get into a state of an anguish or kind of trauma, it throws it off, and then you're locked into the anguish. And then you have to go back to correct it again from disengaging the anguish or the trauma. Whereas if you recognize it there and keep it in the conscious frame of the mechanism and work from the conscious level, you're in control. It's like driving the car. Now, the only time you drive the car without having to worry about the road is when you put it in cruise-o-matic. Automatic, your foot will still have to be in the accelerator, right? That doesn't give you any temporary relief from the stress of the vehicle. The Cruise-O-Matic gives you the temporary relief from the stress of the vehicle from putting your foot on the accelerator. And that's exactly what you're trying to do. To give yourself the relief from the lapse of memory as to where you are or how fast or how slow, you lock into it in a cruise-o-matic way and then go about doing your work. Do you get the idea? So it's to identify the flow, then lock it in, and work. So you can take your foot off the accelerator and then just there. It's the same way inside. You can feel it flowing, recognize it, and lock it in, and go and do it. You got anything? And that's what I've done over the years. I had to learn it that way because that was what it was finally forced itself for me to recognize. If I didn't lock into it, I'd have to always constantly what? Activate it. And then I realized activating it was like stick shipping it and automatic. I wasn't getting any relief from it. I said, hey, wait a minute. This is still a burden to the mechanism. I must find, is when I realized that the cruise-o-matic principle was there, I locked in and then I began to function. And this is why Yogananda asked his guru, when will I find God? He said, you found him already. He said, oh, do I ever found him? He said, I hope you're not expecting some guy sitting in the corner of the universe waiting for you. He said, but if you recognize every moment you're doing something, this internal consciousness is giving the correct interaction, you found it. So that's the same thing. And I began to feel this interaction going on, and then I could perform a service, cut something, talk, and never lose the feeling. I realized this was it. I just had to lock into it and let it flow. Today, over the many years of working with it, all the possibilities are there. And I had to test it for myself, and I could tell without any showing off, there are valid laws of physics waiting for us all to enjoy if we lock into the equiflow and just function consciously. What you saw in that picture yesterday with the people and many other things that are locked in what we call science fiction is not science fiction when you master the equiflow process, because they're all leading to that. So the greater things you shall do is all locked up in it. But here in the environmental world is how to operate with it in a rational way instead of showing off. It isn't that you shouldn't use it for helping others in emergency or so. Well, how many mountains can you move? How many dead people can you raise before the IS bug it? But rather to be functional in your everyday living with the least stress and be healthy, and then let people wonder how you're staying young. You know, we're a sign. I'm looking young, ask me how.
Next to the body potty. You can take it both and you can wear the sign.
But that's the essence of it, you see, gaining the control over the immune function of the mechanism and operating moment to moment.
Fixation, any kind of fixation then is a trying to grasp hold of, it's not just materialism, it's trying to grasp hold of ideas, it's trying to you must get to a point where you don't make plans, where you don't look for tasks.
Well, come back to a yes, no, maybe. The best laid plans of mice and men often turn to ridicule. Yet at the same time, forewarned is forearmed. And conscious calmness is triumph over any one of them that presents themselves. So gain the conscious calmness in order to triumph over any one of the conditions that present themselves. And that's what Jesus said, the peace I give, the world don't give. The world gives you 6 feet under the ground and worrying about where you're going to be. And he's trying to offer us conscious calmness or the strength of peace inside of ourselves by feeling the identity of ourselves. Once you feel the identity of yourself, none of the conditions that threaten life is going to be a threat, because what are you really feeling? What is equiflow? Equiflow is the basis and the core of life itself. It is the thing that holds the universe up together in its own operational laws between constriction and dilation. It's the metabolic functioning within your cellular structure. You have to recognize it's there going on in your body. You wouldn't recognize it before unless it was pointed out to you, and you wouldn't be looking for it as equiflow. If you weren't sick, you'd be looking for it as God and all different labels. Yes, those are not incorrect ways to look at it. Once you begin to understand of what you are, as you put just to see it, they all are locked into this principle. Then this principle takes on a vaster dynamic meaning and quality than just a mere sensation of equalization, because the core of everything is centered in it. Nothing could operate without it. And what are you? Any malfunctioning would be out of sync with it. So the malfunctioning can only be too fast or too slow. And the worst malfunctioning is you shut off permanently. So if this principle doesn't give in to the shutting off principle, then in God I trust, all of his cash. That statement is what came out years ago. You trust in the principle of equiflow, and you don't worry about if debt threatens you. Why? Because it will help you to buffet all the impact of the debt principle on your body. But you have to lock into recognizing it. And therefore they call that God realization. Not somebody sitting in a throne. It's the real awareness of the principle underlying the physical laws of your mechanism and sustaining you in a conscious breathing state. But you want it in the mobile state. You don't want it in the immobile state, because the immobile state is what? Non-functional, non-practical, and you cannot live a non-functional, non-practical existence. You can't sit down all day. You gotta get up and move around. And to get up and move around and lose contact with it, is that practical? You want to get up and move around and still relate to the awareness of it, then that's practical. That's what the first purpose of getting you to be aware of it is, to get up and walk with it so that you can feel it, identify with it. Then from that moment on, you can work towards the conscious activity in any moment, knowing it, you're locked into it. And the evidence is that once you feel it, you notice it doesn't go away until you decide to not relate to it. But you can't talk it. That's the funny thing. You got to feel it. If you're feeling it, it's there.
Ivan, would you clarify your question to, I don't know her name, but she was sitting in that chair. And you asked her if she fell asleep when she was meditating. Would that be a sign of what, toxicity in the body?
Yeah.
Would there be too much carbon dioxide?
Too much carbon dioxide.
How long does it take to get rid of it? Is that when you bathe for about, you know, half hour per pound?
I'm going to the
bathroom. That's going to be a long answer.
It was funny, a friend of mine called me up and she said, how long do I cook a turkey? And I went, oh, I probably cook it at 350 degrees. I don't cook. So I just said this answer, and then I called my husband, who cooks turkeys, who's cooked all of our turkeys, to tell him to cook a turkey. So he told me exactly what I told him, and I went, it was like when he said it, sounded just like Judy calling me up and like, how long do you cook a turkey? We've been cooking gooses.
Ooh.
No, I just made that up.
My stomach's been over here growling. Maybe I'll do anything about food. hurt. I've seen it here.
It started over there and ended up in this corner.
No, I figured you did.
Well, mine
is
stuck. I had it. I was them out of here. And one day, one day I was doing it late at night and the deal got stuck and I woke up the next morning and as soon as I opened my eyes, it was about 5 minutes while I did it.
We all have our ways of detox, I guess.
I'm a bit more fit for the company.
I'm getting used to it now.
The point that you're trying to get at realization is centered on life and health. It's not centered on intellect or evasion of conditions. It's centered on a trust in health, in life. And the more you trust life, the health is there to cope with the conditions that come up to threaten you in any moment of time. So, carbon dioxide will always be with you as long as you breathe. You see? And conditions will always be there to threaten your interaction as to respond or not to respond. So when you begin to see that it is not that you have to phase out of your life, because they are not going to phase out, they're going to be there in many different ways. It's how you gain the strength to cope with it, that they don't bug you no more. And you'll see what is so comical in the end, that all around you, everything falls into its proper time frame. And therefore, timing of the daily events now in your life is the evidence that creative intelligence is directing your existence. Because every incident in 24 hours could be so mathematically well-timed that you spit into it like a slot. You ever notice you want to go to a certain area with your car and you're looking for a parking spot, and before you got there, it's worrying you in your mind, but if you don't worry, there's a parking spot waiting for you as soon as you get there? Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking of, the synchronicity, because synchronicity is the working miracle. Miracle is all there, but there's no, in the end, there aren't any miracles. But the synchronicity of action to time. That's why all life is action. And that's what the woman was saying in that movie, that the action is going on there as life. But in essence, life is action. There's no way life could be in non-action. So if it's action, every instant of the action would be synchronous to every other movement or every other form. And none of the two will smash in. And if you look at the TV screen, when you turn it on, the little molecules are moving, but they don't explode by hitting each other. They're so well timed to just move in within the time frame of each other. And that's exactly what you are relating to in a magnified form from a moment to moment existence, to get into the appreciation of synchronicity, get into the realization that this synchronicity is endless and that this synchronicity permits you to live the utmost. Because it cannot be duplicated, and it will always be the first and last time each moment you live. So you're living in the perpetual flexibility of experiencing life now. And all the things that are needed to sustain it are flowing there now to participate. If you begin to get that flexibility, that's what the Aquarian age is, or Aquarian cycle is all about, this particular process begins to sustain itself in a very strange way. Because that's the direction we're heading to. We're heading to the Aquarian cycle, where flexibility and self-sustenance is operating to maintain it. But if you don't focus on the flexibility, the self-sustenance will not come. You'll block it. But if you focus on the flexibility, the self-sustenance is a guarantee to itself. Creative intelligence cannot make an environment and place you first before the environment. It wouldn't support you. It'd have to create an environment first and make you second to support you. So the environment would have to be an equidistribution. It's a reciprocal movement between you and the environment. To make you before the environment in order to sustain you, where would it sustain itself? It's not a practical condition. And spirituality is practicality. So the practicality is environment first, ecology first, you second as individual, and the reciprocal exchange between the two is the ongoingness.
So if you're in question, it always comes down to that matter of practicality.
Yes.
I mean, I'm thinking today it's a minor struggle, but what the struggle was would have been my intellect telling me, well, this was what I was told to do with this process. And then, but the side that would have gotten it done was the side that was saying, "But this, I have this practical need, and that's why I want to do it in the first place."
Yeah.
And had I just followed the practical need and not gotten into a debate over technique,
yeah,
then I would have been there.
Right. But you see, if you didn't go through it to reevaluate it, you wouldn't be able to test it again when it comes up. So when it comes up again as another test of your persistency to focus, you know how to act with it. But you'd need that as a comparison. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't be able to discuss it. That's why the prodigal son was chosen over the one that stayed home. The one that went out, squandered everything, to the point where it felt incompetent and then had to turn around and go home to ask for a job. He wasn't going home to claim any kind of a recognition as a lost son or squanderer. He just wanted a job to eat. But the father didn't go out looking for him to find him to feed him. He said the father met him halfway. Creative intelligence in your own mechanism is not going to come and take away your fixations and your frustrations. It's going to meet you at a level inside of yourself when you're willing to look at yourself. And so until you're ready to look at yourself, it doesn't interfere. And when you do look at yourself, you have the option of being mobile or immobile in it. Now, you know the immobile state is not a practical state to function from, so the mobile state is the most practical. So you lock into it, and that's what they call the feasting, the glorification. The father give back the feast and have a party. So memory comes in and say, "Hey, wait a minute. I was here, you never gave me no party." Yes, memory was there before you recognized a principle working inside of you to balance you between too fast and too slow. But memory couldn't do a doggone thing to correct too fast or too slow. It took the challenge of going through the lying down to the sitting up, to wriggle around, to lock into an experience that would override what memory had. And that may make you feel anguish because while you were working it, you weren't ready for it. And now you could call that squandering away, because why? You'd rather be doing something else than doing that. But then you did it to the point where you felt it and you got up and you recognized it. But then, as you began to face yourself, you thought you really wasted the time only to see that you didn't waste the time. You have something to compare and analyze that you can fall back on. So you know now what you're working with all the time, that identification within the mobile state of your existence. And you have the comparison of the previous experience that you don't have to repeat that anymore. You just go on to it. But if you didn't have it to compare, you wouldn't be able to trust it the next time. We always have to have some comparison. Thank you. Most of us all feel very inadequate when you can't recall data, because we assess our capabilities and functions to perform in the environment based upon how much you can recall. But we never really look at the process of memory and see why we fail. And yet if you look at the process of memory, three things stand out. One, photographic. Two, repetition. Three, trial and error. Sounds familiar to you?
Can you hear that last?
Trial and error. One, photographic. Two, repetition. Three, trial and error. And this is the crisis of all your memory levels. How much you can photograph, how much you can repeat, and how much you can express in terms of trial and error. And this if you look back, which one is the approach that your parents or your environment enforces on you? Let's see. Oh, we got trial and error. Who said trial and error? Who said repetition? Nobody said photographic.
It's a later skill.
No, I think it's what you see. No, I think it's the first thing you learn, but it's what you do until you sit. That's what your parents don't really work for us.
Well, which one you think you've been deprived of, the photographic or the trial and error or the repetition?
Photographic.
How?
wasn't reinforced. It was sort of, you know, if you, it wasn't reinforced by parents or by society or talked about or given any credence to.
Have you never told your parents you saw certain things in the house and they what? Believe you or disbelieve you? But you know what?
No.
You saw it. Well, why you quit? Why did you quit trying to convince them? Listen to what you're saying, because that's the essence of your ability to remember what you're saying to yourself. Memory determines your survival. When you got behind the wheel of a car, are you driving because you're creative? Or are you driving from memory?
Repetition.
Hear what you say now, repetitious memory. What about photographic memory?
Well, photographic memory is, the way I read it, like an eidetic memory, where you look at something, you can see the whole panorama and be able to recall it. Where other types of memory, you gather parts of the information and you don't see it as well.
Don't you use both?
Mm-hmm.
Same time. As you're driving around looking out the window, you've got to be photographic.
Well, listen to what you're saying yourself, because what you're saying to yourself in reference to your memory is how you function with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you function from the repetitiousness of it, that's how you find you are going to have your problems to live with. If you're saying to yourself through trial and error, that's the way you're going to have to function with it.
That's part of why we're all here, is because we have lousy memories.
No, we don't have lousy memory. It's that we don't know how to use the memory. No one has a lousy memory. Everyone has memory but don't know how to use it. Photographic memory is, always and will be, your natural nature. You don't know how to use it. So you act out repetition by demand of parents. You act out trial and error by demand of parents. When do you act out photographic? When you dream?
Well, you could, when you're on your own.
Is dream photographic? That's non-indexed memory.
How about reading? Reading photographic?
Well, when you read, do you remember easily or less? Do you recall to describe the story when asked what you read? Did it come easy to you to describe it easy after you read it?
Yeah, usually I wouldn't be able to repeat it word for word.
Anybody else have that same problem? They read something and they find they can recall it easier if they were asked to recite it?
If it's right away, it might be a year down the line and somebody says to read that book and say, yeah, I need input.
Maybe it's the definition.
Tonight is photographic.
It's changed.
When you said photographic memory, I instantly flash on somebody who has the ability to look at a page, a book, a painting, look at something, and have instant recall on that at any time. Are you talking about that kind of ability?
Well,
photographic.
Aren't you using your vision to relate to your environment?
Yes, I am.
Then aren't you using the labels to identify what you see from the language?
Yes.
And if you incorrectly label something, wouldn't that cause an anguish in terms of trial and error?
It's equiflow. X-ray area.
Does telepathy come in there?
Mm-hmm.
Does it only use the word telepathy or knowingness? You know, getting in tune with that book, that person, so that you instantly know something?
Ask yourself, where would you store data in your body?
I tend to think in some more of your brain. In the silicon.
Cerebral cortex.
No scientist has yet found a portion of your brain storing any data. There's not a single part of your brain that stores any data. Yet you talk very fast every day.
Somewhere within myself.
Okay.
All the researches that are going on have never identified any part of your anatomy capable of storing data.
I don't know, I have a neighbor who had a severe injury, actually a lot like my brother's injury, only his, my brother's memory didn't get affected, but my neighbor's memory was affected in his injury. It was a football injury that permanently handicapped him. And he can't take care of, where my brother can take care of himself, he can't take care of himself because if he puts a pot of water on him, he forgets it. But then that's what, that's stored data too, isn't it? He can't function because he doesn't have any recall of his previous action.
That's the outward observation, but that's not really what's going on in your cells. We see that as an outward behavior. We can jump to all kind of conclusions of the outward behavior and label the person as being incompetent and total forgetful, when in actuality none of that is happening inside. The relationship of what we identify with through the language has lost its ability to register upon our mechanism, and we don't seem to recognize the missingness of it, so we don't go looking for it. We just stand there in a blank and we are labeled forgetful or absent-minded.
So it's an absence of programming. Whereas we, if we're operating, if we function daily on what we've been programmed, and that's how we, then what he's got is an absence of, or a something has happened to his programming, not his memory.
No, something has happened to the time rate of his ability to connect with his action, to communicate back with what he feels in reference to what is asked of him. The time gap of the feedback has suddenly expanded out into a state of delay. But he hasn't lost his memory. It is that the time gap of bringing back the statement to the question, that time gap has suddenly expanded out. If the time gap was faster prior to the injury, you would say he had a sharp memory. Now that the time gap has what? Expanded, would you say he had a lost memory?
It was a hypo condition.
Good. Now you start to look at yourself more objectively and realize that the brain doesn't store anything. You cut up cells and look inside of them, and they haven't found a single data stored in it.
Stored in the minerals.
Right, it's stored in the oxygen. Because you don't breathe, you couldn't be conscious. That's the funny part of the thing. But we keep going around telling ourselves we're absent-minded, and then Casey comes along and put his head on the book and picks up the data, and then they ask him how you did that. He said, I went back to the Akashic record. Now, how can you go back to the Akashic record? Is recording a storage area? We use recording for what? As a word to represent what?
Duplication of something that's been formed and said.
The word represents an object.
Reproduction.
It represents. It's a label.
With time, yeah, it takes something one time. It functions a lot like the DNA.
Yeah?
It functions like the DNA because that's a the hereditary record as well. Yeah.
Last night we looked at the miracle of life. You mean to tell me those little fellas lost their ability inside of you to form you?
No. They function like a record. I mean, they're...
A blueprint or a pattern.
Yeah, it's like a pattern.
Well,
that's what your DNA is.
All right, if it's functioning as a blueprint or a pattern, is it stored in the cellular structure?
According to, they show this pictures of the DNA in magnification. Is that what it is? They show this particle. Of the 23 chromosomes in each one.
Yeah, but there are always going to be 23 chromosomes in each one doing what? Maintaining a certain geometry or trying to store up some kind of a substance?
Well, they already have the substance stored in them, and what they, when the two 23s get together, well, they set the program up for the development of the division of the cell.
But don't they operate by geometry? They create certain patterns of the way the cells are related to each other as the repetition of these geometries that create the pattern or the repetition?
Well, there you have one word now that we just talked about, repetition. The other one, is it a photographic or is a collective arrangement?
Arrangement.
But then that's trial and error.
I think we need to define our term. What we're talking about memory. Maybe you're talking one thing is photographic and I'm talking
about that's what I was saying earlier.
To me, photographic memory is somebody that can look at a page and a week later they can call off everything on the page. If there's any notations on it, they can tell what it is. I can't do that. But I know people that could.
Then let's get the dictionary and clear up for ourselves once and for all what is the word memory. If their version of what the word means to you versus what you're using it to represent to you.
We're just looking at memory.
Memory are made of this.
Well, I know last night while she's looking that up, it shows the cells splitting and it made a point of saying, you know, this cell is going to produce an identical cell. And it will have the same makeup, the same 23 chromosomes, same DNA.
Except smaller.
Yeah, but then it showed the cell splitting. I'm talking about before the egg and the sperm got together, but it showed a cell dividing, splitting, and said they would be identical.
But in different size. That's the only difference.
Yes, the size.
The reproduction is smaller than the original.
Right.
The question is, how did the original get to form itself? That is what we're going to deal with in terms of true memory. Let's see what memory is.
Okay, it's the mental function or capacity of recalling.
Talk a little loud, they didn't hear you.
Yeah. The mental function or capacity of recalling or recognizing previously learned behavior or past experience.
Ah, that is very important because it had to be where? Previously learned. It's a recall.
If you can recall past lives.
If it's a recall, then it would have to be photographic first to stay there to be recalled from. You can only recall what is recorded, and the first recording would have to be photographic. It's still in the photograph. There are equipment now being made to extract odor rinds and record them. And they have geometrical measurements. And they represent certain pigmentation. Now, how does the oil of the musk smell like? And what color of the spectrum do the oil and the musk fall under?
Am I looking at now?
Read back the radio memory. Give them the... Don't run away from it yet. You see, this is your most vulnerable verbal storage bank. Just as last night, your most vulnerable physiological condition is falling asleep. You're not important to no one in terms of your mouth if you got a poor memory. Not only to yourself. So, let's get some help.
Mental function or capacity of recalling or recognizing previously learned behavior or past.
Anything else?
Yes. The total of what is remembered. And one or one who or that which is remembered. The period of time covered by the faculty of remembrance.
Listen to what you just said. The period of time in the recovery. So when you fail to activate a relationship between emotion and your mechanism, the time gap is your vulnerable factor in reference to you being competent or incompetent. That time gap.
Between the activating of the emotion of the remembrance.
That's right. Otherwise, they say you're absent-minded. But what are they referring to is the time gap, that you don't seem to have a fast time connection between the idea and the action. Before an incident or an injury, the idea and the action, the time gap is very fast. After an injury, the time gap between the incident and the action is very slow or delayed, and therefore they're quickly labeling you, as the environment does, as being incompetent and don't have any memory. And when actual function is indicating what is the real cause, they read.
The mental faculty through which recall takes place is the act of bringing something to mind. So memory would be beyond the gap. It would be the actual.
Discovered what you're saying now. Interesting, huh?
Donna?
Yes?
Okay, we've determined that memory is in the oxygen. But isn't there a part of the brain that draws the oxygen together to connect to it?
Oxygen produces the phenomena called consciousness. It doesn't produce the phenomena called memory. If you don't breathe, you can't be conscious. And if you aren't conscious, you can't record. You first got to be conscious in order to record. But the oxygen has two ways, via the nostril and via the osculation process of the mouth connected to the umbilical cord. But you're not an individual until you breathe through the nostril. But your cells will record photographically what they have to photograph and store it in order to Xerox themselves.
They store it in their oxygen.
Good. But or they store it in their silicon carbon content. Oxygen only produces the phenomena called consciousness. It doesn't produce memory.
And then stored in
the
silicon.
So the cell has to have oxygen to be conscious, and then the cell has to have something else to record.
I'm confused. Hey, what recording tape do you
have? We've been talking that the energy or the memory is stored in oxygen. I breathe yours, and you breathe my oxygen.
Your conscious, the consciousness is in the oxygen to allow you to zero in on the imprint of the storage.
But the imprint is in the oxygen.
The imprint is not in the oxygen.
And I've lost.
Adano, what is the mineral that is involved with tape recorders and recording tape?
Silicon.
Silicon, okay.
And then there's carbon. There's carbon dating and silicon dating or silicon printing.
So
that's where you're coming back to carbon.
So it's photographed and that becomes the negative of the photograph in the cell.
The first impression is a photograph before you can do what? story.
So the carbon becomes the negative that is stored on, or the silicon?
No. You're storing the data, but you can't store unless you have something to store. But you'd have to have a photographic image of what you're going to store.
Right.
So the photographic image would have to come prior to the storage process.
At the negative of the camera.
That's the film. Where is it going to be, how is it going to make a negative without a film?
Well, actually, it's a digital type of a thing rather than a film.
Electromagnetic, some sort.
Those are all the after effects of the original condition. The very first impression is photographic.
Right.
It has to be light. And when it is photographed into you, it's hologrammic.
Okay.
Before it can play itself back in an electromagnetic field.
Memory then is the printing of that negative.
That's what you have to present yourself with when you need to confront somebody with what?
With data,
right? So, developing the memory, we have to look at it in three ways. The photographic process first, the repetitious process, and the trial and error process. You talk yourself into one of those conditions and therefore you have that to consider to function with. So to say you're feeling incompetent, is this one of the three you talk yourself into? Or lock yourself into?
You were out of. Can you get memory off three of those things? You photograph, it's repeated, and then you test it out through trial and error?
What did I say before?
I don't understand. You mean locked into or locked out of?
No, locked into.
So you get stuck on like repetition and think you can't have memory if you don't have repetition?
Repetition is your avenue for functional survival. Trial and error may be another person's avenue for their functional survival. But behind it all is photographic.
Everybody photographs, then you have to have one or the other besides that. Is that the idea?
Yes. All right, don't go too far. Anybody got the autobiography for Yogi? Will you take it out and read An Experience in Cosmic Consciousness?
After we get our photographic image, well, how do we store it to recall?
We're going to read it now.
Okay.
To find out for yourself what you, how you talking to yourself into in non-functional operation of your memory at the tremendous loss of its capabilities and only getting a minimal use of it.
Does that mean that if someone seems to have still have
Did you open up right away?
That they haven't gotten
I'll be back. I'm beautiful.
But they haven't gotten there.
Let her tell you of synchronicity. Is that synchronicity of memory now? Or magic or consciousness or replay?
I picked up the book and I carried it in here and I thought, well, I wonder where that is. And my thumbs were at the place I opened it. It was exactly what
what do you call that?
Instant memory?
Your thumbs have memory.
I'll let the miracles happen to you. Because if the miracles don't happen, you're not going to see where you're cheating yourself with your own knowledge of what you are.
Maybe we should have a loud voice.
Don't do that.
I hear Guruji, my shamefacedness spoke more eloquently for me. Let us go to the kitchen and find something to eat. Sri Yukteswar's manner was as casual as though hours and not days had separated us. Master, I must have disappointed you by my abrupt departure from my duties here. I thought you might be angry with me. No, of course not. Breath springs only from thwarted desires. I do not expect anything from others, so their actions cannot be in opposition to wishes of mine. I could not use you for my own ends. I'm happy only for your own true happiness. Sir, one hears of divine love in a vague way, but today I'm indeed having a concrete example of it from your angelic self. In the world, even a father does not easily forgive his son if he leaves his parents' business without warning. You show not the slightest vexation, though you must have been put to great inconvenience by the many unfinished tasks I left behind. We looked into each other's eyes, where tears were shining, a blissful wave engulfing. I was conscious that the Lord, in the form of my guru, was expanding the limited ardors of my heart to vast reaches of cosmic love. A few mornings later, I made my way to Master's empty sitting room. I planned to meditate, but my laudable purpose was unshared by disobedient thoughts. They scattered like birds before the hunter. Mukunda, Sri Jajar's voice sounded from a distant balcony. I felt as rebellious as my thoughts. Master always urges me to meditate, I muttered to myself. He should not disturb me when he knows why I came to his room. He summoned me again. I remained obstinately silent. Third time, his tone held rebuke. Sir, I'm meditating, I shouted protestingly. I know how you are meditating, my guru called out. With your mind disturbed like leaves in a storm, come here to me. Thwarted and exposed, I made my way sadly to his side. Poor boy, mountains cannot give you what you want. Master spoke caressingly, comfortingly. His calm gaze is unfathomable. Your heart's desires shall be fulfilled. Sri Yukteswar seldom indulged in riddles. I was bewildered. He struck gently on my chest above the heart. My body became immovably rooted. Breath was drawn out of my lungs as if by some huge magnet. Soul and mind instantly lost their physical bondage and streamed out like fluid, piercing light from my every pore. The flesh was as though dead, yet in my intense awareness, I knew that never before had I been fully alive. My sense of identity was no longer narrowly confined to the body, but embraced the circumambient atoms. People on distant streets seemed to be moving gently over my own remote periphery. The roots of plants and trees appeared through dim transparency of the soil. I discerned the inward flow of their sap. The whole vicinity lay bare before me. My ordinary frontal vision was now changed to a vast spherical sight, simultaneously all perceptive. To the back of my head, I saw men strolling far down Grey Ghat Lane, and I noticed also a white cow that was leisurely approaching. When she reached the open ashram gate, I observed her as though with my two physical eyes. After she had passed behind the brick wall of the courtyard, I saw her clearly still. All objects within my panoramic gaze trembled and vibrated like quick motion pictures. My body, masters, the familiar courtyard, the furniture and trees, the trees and sunshine, occasionally became violently agitated until all melted into a luminescent
see, even as sugar crystals thrown into a glass of water dissolve after being shaken. Unifying light alternated with materializations of form, metamorphoses, revealing the law of cause and effect in creation. An oceanic joy broke upon calm, endless shores of my soul. The spirit of God, I realized, is exhaustless bliss. His body is countless tissues of light. The swelling glory within me began to envelop towns, continents, earths, solar and stellar systems, tenuous nebulae, and floating universes. The entire cosmos, gently luminous, like a city seen afar at night, shimmered within me, the infinitude of my being. Dazzling light beyond the sharply etched global outlines faded slightly at the furthest edges. There I saw a mellow radiance, ever undiminished. It was indescribably subtle. The planetary pictures were formed of a grosser light. The divine dispersion of rays poured from an internal source, blazing to galaxies, transfigured with ineffable auras. Again and again I saw the creative beams condensed into constellations, then resolve into sheets of transparent flame. By rhythmic reversion, sextillation, worlds pass into diaphanous luster, then fire becomes firmament. I recognize the center of the Empyrean as a point of intuitive perception in my heart. Irradiating splendor issued from my nucleus to every part of the universal structure. Blissful Amrita, nectar of immortality, pulsated through me with a quick silver fluidity. Creative voice of God I heard resounding as Om, the vibration of the cosmic order. Suddenly the breath returned to my lungs. With a disappointment almost unbearable, I realized that my infinite immensity was lost. Once more I was limited to the humiliating cage of a body, not easily accommodated to the spirit. Like a prodigal child, I had run away from my microcosmic home and had imprisoned myself in a narrow microcosm. My guru was standing motionless before me. I started to prostrate myself at his holy feet in gratitude for his having bestowed on me the experience of cosmic consciousness that I had long passionately sought. He held me upright and said quietly, "You must not get overdrunk with ecstasy. Much work yet remains for you in the world. Come, let us sweep the balcony floor, and we will walk with Gandhi." I fetched the broom. Master, I knew, was teaching me the secret of balanced living. The soul must stretch over the cosmogonic abyss while the body performs its daily duties. We drew Yukteswar and I set out later for a stroll. I was still entranced in unspeakable rapture. I saw our bodies as two astral pictures moving over a road by the river whose essence was sheer light. It is the spirit of God that actively sustains every form and force in the universe. Yet he is transcendental and aloof in a blissful, uncreated void beyond the world of vibratory phenomena, Master explained. Those who attain self-realization on Earth live in a similar twofold existence. Conscientiously performing their work in the world, they are yet immersed in an inward beatitude. Lord has created all men from the illimitable joy of his being. Although they are painfully cramped by the body, God nevertheless expects that men made in his image shall ultimately rise above all sinful temptations and reunite with him. The cosmic vision left many permanent lessons. By daily stilling my thoughts, I could win release from the delusive conviction that my body was a mass of flesh and bones traversing the hard soil of matter. The breath and the restless mind I saw are like storms that lash the ocean of light into waves of material forms. Earth, sky, human beings, animals, birds, trees. No perception of the infinite as one light can be had except by calming those storms. As often as I quieted the two natural tumults, I beheld the multitudinous waves of creation melt into one lucid sea, even as the waves of the ocean, when tempests subside, serenely dissolve into unity. Master bestows the divine experience of cosmic consciousness when his disciple, by meditation, has strengthened his mind to a degree where the vast vistas would not overwhelm him. Mere intellectual willingness or open-mindedness is not enough. Only adequate enlargement of consciousness by yogic practice and devotional bhakti can prepare one to absorb the liberating shock of omnipresence. The divine experience comes with a natural inevitability to the sincere devotee. His intense craving begins to pull at God with an irresistible force. The Lord, as a cosmic vision, is drawn by that magnetic ardor into the seeker's range of consciousness. I wrote in my later years the following poem.
Okay. Now, does he have a memory?
He'll remember that experience.
Yeah, but it's first photographic. Okay. In total, then it would be repetitious after that experience in terms of survival. And then trial and error after the experience in terms of survival. So, working only on the repetition part of your nature to develop a memory, how much memory do you think you can develop?
You wouldn't go anywhere.
Yeah?
You wouldn't go anywhere.
You ain't going too far. You may need many incarnations to go 1 inch. And trial and error. That's why we get fooled in the who's of the repetition and the trial and error, thinking we are developing a memory, when the actual awareness is locked up inside of us of the total thing. And once you tap the total vision of what you are, you appear to have the most unique memory to those who surround you, when in actuality they have it, but they don't know what.
How to use it.
All right, from what he said, is the future available for him to recall? Or is only the past available for him to recall? It can all be seen. But then, whatever is required to function, that is where the recall would come from, by repetition or by trial and error. So if you only going to focus on repetition, then that's all you can able to generate. But then if you focus on repetition, would you be calling on the future or you be calling on the past? Good. And if you're trial and error? That's it. So you're not really discovering true memory. True memory is and always will be the whole creative process right in front of you as a picture. That's why we call it photographic memory. And thou shalt have no other gods before me. The first three letters of memory and more of me. What would that image impression do on his mentality? Leave him with what?
He remembers God,
and more and more as he keeps reliving the experience, he isn't going any place, but he's capable of what? Acting in the present very efficiently to the amazement of those who think he's what? Memorizing? Mm-hmm. Or trial and error?
Well,
in actuality, what?
Would it appear as trial and error? that what other people would see?
They will see trial and error, or they'll see recall by repetition. But do they see the true photographic comprehension of what is going on?
No, because they judge what they see from their experience.
Good. Now, the incident just now with the book, if you saw that yesterday before you did it today, what would you say?
That I just recalled from reading it.
Well, you will say, when it happened yesterday, you are seeing the future. If you saw the incident just now with the book opening at the page yesterday, what would you call the incident? See in the future?
Mm-hmm. No, it'd be now.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have the book in your hand yesterday. Today is today in terms of the incident.
Oh.
I'm talking of yesterday as a moment in time, seeing the incident of opening the book.
In my mind, I would think it is.
And then you would think what? You're a victim of what?
Imagination.
You see? When in actuality you are no victim of imagination, you were experiencing the actual photographic memory of the universe.
Is that true of all imagining?
Yeah. There is nothing here that is not already finished, waiting to be lived out in terms of conscious experience.
We all take things in.
You hear this nice thing? We all take things in.
But being able to recall it is the glitch that blows our most of us.
If you work towards the total vision, you will see that memory is not something you cater to. Conscious is something you cater to. I'll let you read the other part now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Adana?
Yeah.
Yesterday when we were talking about the monk who left himself in 12 places.
Yes.
And that we all have that capacity,
mm-hmm,
to be in many places.
Yeah.
Is what that is, our different, acting out our different potential, are different, the choices that we might have made, and each thing is still in existence?
Yes, it is also the repetition or the trial and error. Which one of the two you may be locked into versus the total condition that is already there for you to live. Now, that monk saw himself in all 12 places before he decided to do what? I let him have 12 bodies to play with. But he actually went to one spot to visit and then went into the state of shutting down. And that one place claimed they have his body because he did shut down in their place. Yet to this day, the other 11 monasteries are all claiming on that same day that monk shut down at that same time in their place. So now we know they have 11 bodies of Milarepa, and it does exist. We can't get rid of them. That's the funny part of it. It does exist. 11, there are 12 bodies in 12 locations of Tibet. All claiming.
That's part of, that would be part of the photographic memory principle.
Right, that's the part of the photographic memory principle put into the atomic structure for those 12 monasteries to reflect upon, that maybe our version of physics and our environment is not what we think it is. There may be more to it. And we need to go deep into ourselves to recognize something that is not yet tapped, that needs to be awakened, so that we could love more compassionately. The reason I'm going to go back to her now is there's a section there after that poem. Don't read the poem. Pass the poem. Go to the next step.
Sri Yukteswar taught me how to summon the blessed experience at will, also how to transmit it to others when their intuitive channels are developed. For months after the first time, I entered the state of ecstatic union, comprehending daily why the Upanishads say that man is rasa, the most relishable.
Now the word is a static union. Union with what? Memory of what you are? Who you are? Or conscious relationship to what you are? Is it a conscious union? A conscious relationship?
Yes, it's the act.
So it's not a memory.
No, it's the act.
Keep on going.
One morning, however, I took a problem to the master. I want to know, sir, when shall I find God? You have found him. Oh, no, sir, I don't think so. My guru was smiling. I'm sure you aren't expecting a venerable personage adorning a throne in some antiseptic corner of the cosmos. I see, however, you are imagining that possession of miraculous powers is proof that one has found God. No? One might gain the power to control the whole universe, yet find the Lord elusive still. Spiritual advancement is not to be measured by one's display of outward powers, but solely by the depth of his bliss in meditation.
Now that part is not sufficient for a guy like me to accept. What is the depth of the bliss of meditation?